back in case you're in the wrong room for the wrong reason. But we appreciate you being here tonight. And my name is Fred Oswald. I am the chair of the Central RAC. Before we go any further, I'd like to have the other RAC members introduce themselves. Starting on my far right, Matt.
Matt Clark, I represent Sportsman.
Larry Fitzgerald, represent Agricultural.
Richard Hansen at large.
Chris Marble at large.
Carl Hurst, Sportsman.
Tim Fair at large.
Sarah Flinders, Forest Service.
Before we move to those action items, we need to have a motion to approve last month's agenda that was emailed to you, and also approval of the minutes for this evening. There is a... the minutes from last month and the agenda for tonight is what we're looking to approve. For some reason, the report on the last Wildlife Board meeting is not there, but that will be part of what we'll be talking about tonight. So with that in mind, is there a motion to approve last month's minutes and this month's agenda?
I'll go ahead and make a motion, Fred, to approve last month's minutes and the agenda for tonight.
Thank you, Chris.
Second. Art, there we go. We're on. Up Spanish Fork Canyon in our Dairy Fork Wildlife Management Area, we've had a bull hog treatment. If a bull hog is just a big machine that macerates junipers, and if you could probably benefit, if you're deciding whether to have psychiatric treatment or getting a bull hog, the bull hog will probably take care of all your problems, you know. No one can feel bad coming out of a machine like that. At any rate, aquatic section, there's about 30,000 fish going into Jordanelle this next week, and it's part of a study to compare success of stocking 10-inch versus 8-inch, also at different times and different locations. So they got a lot of variables they're working through there. But bottom line, we're not getting a return to the creel on our rainbow trout stocking, and it's due to the predator fish, the smallmouth bass, and the larger browns. They're hoping that that perhaps we'll be able to show that going to a 10-inch fish is worth the extra cost. I was told that it's almost twice as expensive to raise fish to 10-inch as it is to raise them to 8-inch. And I think we heard that at the Wildlife Board meeting this last go-around, and that's a good reason to spend time doing a study. In conjunction with the Forest Service, we're looking at a proposal to reintroduce Bonneville cutthroat trout into Mill Creek, and that's ongoing. Fishing improves as the temperatures drop in reservoirs. Now is a great time to get out and fish. Got to just wedge it in between the upland game and the big, it's just too much. Can't do it all. Monster pike caught at Yuba Reservoir, 46 inches long. If you haven't seen that one on YouTube, you got to go check that out. Gill netting has been completed at Deer Creek, Jordanelle, and Strawberry Reservoirs. The study there at Jordanelle does continue, and we're working with Utah County to resolve some access issues out at the Knolls on Utah Lake. In our conservation outreach section, there are a lot of changes going on as far as reorganization. We've got a wildlife recreation program that takes in shooting sports, hunter recruitment, hunting and fishing workshops, expos, hunter education, and that's all moving into outreach. The hunter education is moving from the law enforcement section, and the community fishing is moving from aquatics. And There'll also be the shooting sports, the Youth Hunter Education Challenge, National Archery in the Schools Program, Hunter Ed Plus, and others are moving from law enforcement to outreach. You're going to be busy. Yeah. But he has help. Derek Murdoch was selected to replace Katie Koppel as the volunteer coordinator. He's been a seasonal, doing a lot of that work since Katie resigned in July. And then Tanya Kiefer is moving over from aquatics to run the community fishing program out of outreach. And she'll also take on a lot of these wildlife recreation programs. The Hunter Ed Plus program was successful in its first year of operation. It's a mentored shotgun shooting instruction and mentored hunts for recent Hunter Ed graduates. We hope to be able to continue that this next year. In our law enforcement section, we did come across another large canine in Spanish Fork Canyon, the Diamond Fork area, and the skull was sent to the Fish and Wildlife Service lab in Oregon to determine if it is a wolf hybrid, or some other dog. And this is the second one that we've sent in for testing. We haven't received any results back. And also in law enforcement, they had checkpoints at Strawberry and 12 Mile during the deer hunt, yielded very few violations, so that's a good sign. Any questions? Any more updates on the duck hunt, Matt? Kind of slowed up after that first weekend. Swans are in, definitely in.
There we go. RAC members, I think we're going to have enough time tonight after we finish our action items for each of you to share your own experience with the deer hunt. I think given the first year of it now and the fact that we spent so much time with it, I think it would be helpful for Anise to hear from us as well as the Wildlife Board in terms of your own experience, your own personal experience, or feedback you've had from your constituents as to basically your overall impressions. I don't want to take a lot of time tonight, but I think it would be appropriate. And I think we have the time to do that. So be thinking about that, and we will take a few moments at the end of our meeting to just have you share your thoughts about the first year of our unit deer hunt. With that in mind, we'll go to our action items. For those of you who are here for the first time tonight, let me briefly explain how this works. For each one of our action items, somebody from the DWR will give a 10 to 15 minute presentation on the action item, offering background information and the proposal from the division. At the end of the presentation, I'll ask the RAC members if they have any questions or clarification on the proposal. And then I'll ask you as audience members if you have any questions or clarification to the presenter on the presentation that he's made. If you have a question, I would invite you to come up to the microphone here, let us know who you are, and go ahead and state your question or your clarification that you're seeking. Please remember that this is not the time for your presentation, only to ask questions on the presentation. And then when that is done, I will close the question period and we will ask for public comment from you. We appreciate you being here tonight and we would like to hear from you on any of the action items. If you do choose to make a public comment, I would invite you to fill out one of these yellow cards for us before you make your comment. They are on the table in the back of the room, just to let us know who you are and what you want to comment on. And we will be taking these comments, and if you are representing an organization, we'd like you to keep your comments to 5 minutes or under. If you're representing yourself, if you could try and be as concise as possible and take more than 3 minutes to let us know what your feelings and concerns are with regard to the action item. Once all of our comments are taken, I'll go ahead and close the comment period and we'll bring it back to the RAC members and they will deliberate what they've heard, and then we will make a recommendation on the action item to the Wildlife Board. So that's the way we'll proceed. And if there are no questions on our proceedings, we'll go ahead with action item number one, and that will be the Bucks Bulls 2000 season dates and application deadline. And Anissa New, the Wildlife Program Coordinator, is going to make the presentation. Thanks for being here, Anise.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and your ACT members. It's good to be in the Central Region of Residence. There's a lot of fun here. I'll be back again. Tonight I'll be presenting the Bucks Bulls once in a lifetime season dates and proclamation rule, also some boundary changes. Before I start with the deer hunt, I'd like to share
my deer hunting story. Whoa, big change there. We had a great hunt this year. We packed in on the Manti, three of us, you know, hiked in, packed the camp in, and had to pack out three times as many times because we each got a deer, three adult deer. So it was a fun hunt this year. So I'll share that before everybody else shares theirs. Okay, moving on. So as far as general season deer hunt dates go, this coming year in 2013, not a whole lot of changes recommended. We basically just rolled back the dates to adjust for the calendar dates. And so the dates are fairly similar to last year, basically a one-day difference. So the archery season will be August 17th through September 13th, as it has been in the past. The muzzleloader season will be September 25th through October 3rd, and the any weapon season will be October 19th through the 27th. No changes there, a 9-day muzzleloader season, a 9-day any weapon season, and a 28-day archery season. Similarly with elk, no major changes, just kind of rolling back the date to make the start dates a Saturday and a Wednesday, whatever they end up being. The archery spike bull hunt will start August 17th and then on September 6th. The reason the spike bull hunt ends earlier than the any bull hunt is because, as you may or may not be aware, that does overlap with the limited entry archery hunt as well on those units. So this, by ending it 7 days short, it gives those limited entry archers the 7 days closest to the rut to basically hunt without interference by spike hunters. And it's also, by having it be 7 days, they also are assured a weekend as well. That's the rationale behind closing the spike hunt early. The any bull season will go from the 17th of August to the 13th of September, just like the general archery deer hunt. Our any weapon season will run from October 5th through October 17th. The muzzleloader season will run from October 30th through November 7th. The youth any bull season, usually we run it concurrent with the limited entry elk hunt, which is September 14th through the 22nd. It gives those youth a chance to hunt bulls that are rutting on those any bull units. The late youth any bull hunt, this is a hunt that takes place in the northeast region, only on a small subunit of the Vernal. It's a long hunt because these bulls are basically, the reason we have this hunt is these bulls live on mostly private land and are inaccessible early on in the season, but when we get some weather, they do come on to public land, and it provides some opportunity for youth to be able to harvest them. Usually we've had, you know, 15 or so permits on it, so it's not a ton of permits, but we give them a long period to harvest those because we're never sure when they're going to be there because it's weather related. Okay, moving to some statewide recommendations or recommended changes. We are recommending allowing youth for 2013 season to purchase unlimited over-the-counter general season archery permit. I want to clarify that even though that's a statewide recommendation, these are archery permits on a unit-by-unit basis. So after the drawing, youth that did not get a permit in the drawing for some reason can purchase, like say dad drew whatever unit, they can go purchase an archery tag for that unit and go hunt it. There was some concern because it says unlimited that this, you know, this may be something that may be abused, but we have had something similar to this in the past. 2 years ago, we had 1,500 permits set aside to a similar program, and we only had about 450 youth take advantage of that. So it's not going to be a large number. Obviously, taking up archery is not something every youth can do, and it takes a little bit of coaching and so on. So we do anticipate this being a way to get youth into the field, but you know, we're not worried about it taking up a lot of tags. If we start seeing those permits creep up, we can start setting limits on those permits if we see that that's an issue. Currently, we don't anticipate that being an issue. I'll start some regional recommendations. Basically, the southern region is recommending change the Fillmore Oak Creek South unit from limited entry to any bull. This is actually something that was already passed by the Wildlife Board when we did our unit plans. We're just basically codifying it by putting it in the proclamation. So this is something that the board has already acted on, but we're just making sure it makes it into the guidebook. Similarly, they're recommending changing a portion of the beaver that's west of Highway 15 from limited entry to any bull. Both of the beaver west of I-15 and the Fillmore Oak Creek are fairly similar. They have lots of private land. They're not great elk habitat. They do have a few elk out there, but you have to be, you have to know where you are, and maneuvering private land and all that makes it more conducive to having an any bull hunt than a limited entry hunt. And those that have hunted the Fillmore Oak Creek in the past could attest to that. It's not the greatest of limited entry units. So we feel that it would make a better any bull units, and so did the committee that was put together to put this unit plan together. So that's the reason we're doing that. And as I mentioned, both of these unit plans were passed by the Wildlife Board, and they have gone through this RAC and other RACs as well. So. Okay, lots of verbiage on this slide. This is a Southeast Region recommendation, and most of these are just boundary changes, fairly minor boundary changes, just to make things line up with species line up with one another. And I'll go through them. Basically, they want to modify the Henry Mountains deer, elk, and bighorn sheep hunt boundaries, and a San Rafael South pronghorn boundary. To exclude Capitol Reef National Park. Currently, the boundary goes to a road that runs right through the park, but in the boundary description, it says that the park is excluded, which kind of can be a little bit confusing for folks. So what we've done is just made the boundary right up to the park boundary. They're recommending modifying the Booklift South Bighorn Sheep and Pronghorn Hunt boundaries to match the deer boundary. Basically, that change just moves the boundary from the Green River about a quarter mile into a road that goes down. That was already changed on the deer. They just wanted to make the sheep and the bighorn sheep and the elk match that as well. No, I'm sorry, bighorn sheep and pronghorn. And then the elk as well has changed a little bit, but it's not the exact same boundary as the sheep and pronghorn. So modify the Booklift's Bitter Creek South limited entry elk boundary to match the deer boundary as well. So they're recommending modifying the 9 Mile Ranch Creek boundary basically to match the Booklift's, because that is right next to the Booklift. So when you move the boundary quarter mile, you have to actually change the boundary for the 9 Mile as well. Modify the La Salle Mountain San Juan limited elk hunt boundary to match the changes that made to general season deer boundary. This is a small area between the La Salle unit and the San Juan unit. That's a fairly dry area that not a lot of deer and elk use, but they do show up there sometimes. And they did make that change for when we changed the general season deer to unit by unit basis, and they wanted to make the elk match that, and that's the rationale for that change. And then the last one is to modify the La Salle Potash Bighorn and the La Salle South Cisco pronghorn hunt boundaries, so they're the same. Right now they overlap slightly, but this makes them all the same boundary, and they'll have the same name as well. So it's just some housekeeping stuff to make everything match better. The northern region recommended changes. They're recommending changing the pilot Mountain limited entry elk boundary to include some private land where depredation is currently occurring. This basically just moves the boundary from kind of right now, it kind of hugs the base of the mountain. It moves it a little bit further east to include some of that private land. They're recommending adding a premium limited entry elk hunt on the Cache Meadowville unit to make it consistent statewide. That unit has enough permits to have a premium hunt. For those of you that are not familiar with what a premium limited entry elk hunt is, it allows hunters who draw that permit to hunt all the seasons. It's not a specific hunt to a unit, but it just allows people on the Meadowville unit to hunt the early rifle, the archery muzzleloader, and late rifle. And this makes it consistent with other statewide units. They're recommending adding a bighorn sheep hunt on the Pilot Mountain for 2013 per our arrangement with Nevada. We have a small bighorn sheep population on the Pilot Mountains. In the past, we've had, an agreement with Nevada because that range does go on in both states. When there are enough sheep, if there are enough sheep to have more than one permit, we split them equally. If there's only enough sheep to have one, then we alternate years. They actually had, we had one tag 2 years ago. They had a tag this year. And then we're actually recommending two tags for this coming year. One will be a Utah tag, one will be a Nevada tag. Well, we haven't set permits yet, but that's going to probably be the recommendation after the survey that they just did. They found enough rams to probably be able to issue two permits. Since Nevada has to set their allocations as well, that would be the minimum we could do is two. They're recommending allowing a harvest of either sex deer on the Ogden Extended Archery Unit to be consistent statewide. Currently on the Wasatch Front Extended, you can take either sex, but on the Ogden, it's buck only, and this just makes it more consistent and makes more sense since we are trying to control those populations amongst the houses and things like that. By being able to take an antlerless deer, this helps in that population control as well. They're recommending clarifying the boundary description for the cache unit to basically inform hunters that there is a posted area around the Meadow and Hardware Ranch that is close to hunting. It's always been posted, and hunters that hunt there, for the most part, know that there's no hunting there, but this actually puts it in the boundary description, so when they read it, they realize to be looking out for those postings. The Central Region is recommending adding a late any weapon limited entry elk hunt on the Wasatch, Nebo, and Deep Creek units. Basically, this is meant to reduce crowding. When we initially did the elk plan, those units did have a late hunt, but then we discontinued them when we saw that success rate on that late hunt was very similar to the success rate during the rut. And at that time, 7-8 years ago, we didn't have as many permits on these units, so it didn't make sense to have two hunts. Now that we're up to, more than 300 permits on the Wasatch, it really makes sense to split up the hunters to make it a more enjoyable hunt, less crowded, both during the rut and on that late rifle hunt. So that's the rationale for this hunt. The success rate on these late hunts, especially on the Wasatch, will be fairly similar to the rut hunt. So, I don't know what the permits numbers will be. We'll set permit numbers once we get the harvest information back. But, it will likely, this is not meant to increase permits. It's just meant to distribute the current permits and reduce crowding. We're recommending adding a premium limited entry elk hunt on the Deep Creek unit. Again, this is a unit that has, if the recommendation is accepted, enough permits to have a premium elk hunt. And again, that just means they can hunt all the seasons if they draw that permit. Add a mountain goat hunt on the Nebo unit. The survey that was just done on that Nebo unit found that there were enough goats to have a hunt, and this is very exciting news for those who are goat hunting enthusiasts or even watchers that we have a good population there that's doing well. And recommending discontinuing the late doe-only hunt on the Wasatch Front extended archery area to be consistent with the Ogden unit. So we will still be able to take a doe or a buck during the regular season, but starting December 1st, there used to be a doe-only hunt that went to December 15th. This will be discontinued, and that way everything is consistent along the Ogden and Wasatch Front areas. Some key dates for the 2013 season: the big game drawing for bucks and bulls once in a lifetime, and the new dedicated hunter applicants. Basically, the period is February 1st through March 4th, 2013. There is a bit of an extension for those that just want to apply for a bonus point or preference point, and they can actually go all the way up to March 11th. And then those applicants that want to withdraw their application can also go to March 11th. The results will be posted by May 31st for the drawing for the 2013 season. Lifetime license questionnaires and unit selection deadline. Basically, what will happen is if lifetime license holders will automatically be assigned the unit that they had the previous year. Now, if for some reason changes unit selection, if you want to change your unit, so if you hunted one unit this year and then you want to change it, you have to submit that form by March 4th if you're a lifetime license holders. Those that do not, that didn't hunt in 2012, so they won't get assigned a unit, and failed to choose a unit by the deadline, will obtain whatever, will be able to obtain whatever leftover permits are available. Shed antler and shed horn season dates. You have to have the online course completion certificate if you're going to gather shed antlers and shed horns between February 1st and April 15th. If you are going out any time outside those dates, you do not need that certificate. Dates when hunters may purchase or sell big game or its parts. Basically, if you're going to sell antlers, heads, horns of legally taken big game, you can do it between February 15th and July 31st. And then if you're selling untanned hides of legally taken big game, you can do that between August 1st and February 14th. And basically the rationale for those two dates, and they've been around forever, is they want to discourage people you can sell antlers outside of the hunting season. So they want to discourage people from going out shooting animals and selling the antlers. But then you can sell the hides during the hunting season, because obviously if you have an untanned hide, it doesn't keep very long, so you want to be able to sell it during the season. And that's the rationale for those two different dates. Okay, we have some recommended disabled hunter general season hunt extension dates. These, again, did not change from last year. We just moved them by one day to adjust for the calendar. We allow disabled hunters an extension. In some cases, it's pre-season. In some cases, it's post-season, basically, so they can hunt, gain a little bit of an advantage because of their disability. Archery deer, it's a pre-season extension. It goes from August 12th through the 16th. Muzzleloader deer, it goes from September 20th through the 24th. Any weapon deer, October 14th through the 18th. And an archery elk is the same as archery deer, August 12th through the 16th. Muzzleloader, any bull elk, November 8th through the 13th. And then the any weapon, any bull elk, September 14th through the 22nd. And they can also hunt in that area in the northeast region where the youth hunt as well in that same time frame, November 30th through January 15th. And then the muzzleloader spike elk, it's a postseason extension, goes from November 11th through the 15th. And then the any weapon spike elk, again, it's a postseason extension that goes from October 18th through the 22nd. So, again, those are not changes from last year. We just like to put them in because they will be in the proclamation. That's all I have on that presentation. I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Anise. Questions for Anise from RAC members? Richard.
How's the bighorn doing on Nebo?
You know, I'll have to ask Dennis to weigh in on that. I haven't had a report recently, so. Did Dennis leave?
Skip right
on. Okay. Maybe when he comes back, he can update you. He just stepped out.
I just know that a lot of guys have been seeing quite a few, and they've seen a lot of lambs.
Yeah, well, that's good news. Yeah, I haven't had a report from Dennis recently, so I can't comment.
We're going to be doing a survey
this year. Okay. So, yeah. I think any information would be from the ground that they got, but it sounds like they're going to be doing a survey coming up this during the rut, so they'll get a good count on those guys.
I can't remember the dates that for the late hunts on the Wasatch, Nebo, and Deep Creek, when we had them, what those dates were and what you're looking at for.
Yeah, it's in your packet. I'll read them for you. So, general season. Okay, so the late hunt on the elk. It's November 9th through the 17th.
Other questions? Anise, this is a little off the subject, but do you know if a person can go to the website now and look at the 30 units and know how many and know what the applications were, whether they were over, under subscribed, and how far? Are those figures available now?
I do believe they are from the drawings from last year. Yeah. But I'm not positive. Usually we have them back by this time. Yeah. They'll certainly be back before you have to put in for the drawing.
So a person could look at those and find out?
Right. We always have the odds way before people
can. But this will be the first year by unit.
Right,
the odds.
Right. It's not going to be very telling the first year because it doesn't show a trend. It's just going to show where everybody thought it was a great year to hunt. But it will tell you what the odds were, at least for the 2012 season. It may not, you know, it usually takes a few years before people figure out where they want to hunt. So, yeah, it will be available, but it's not going to be very telling, I don't imagine.
Okay. Other questions from RAC members? Matt?
Yeah, Anise, I'm just curious about the two new Any Bull units.
Mm-hmm.
Can you expand on the elk? I mean, I heard, you know, you said there wasn't that great an elk habitat.
Right.
But there are viable herds,
yeah,
both of those,
yeah,
units. And
yeah, and
what's
the
thinking behind that?
Well, and the thinking behind it is, you know, what we usually classify as an any bull unit is a unit that has elk on it, obviously, that has lots of private land, so it's kind of hard to gain access to the elk, or it has wilderness, which, you know, reduces access to the elk. And those units are fall into that. The oak, both of them obviously used to be limited entry. The beaver will, the majority of the elk on the beaver are east of the Highway 15, so that's not going to be much different. There are a few elk that live west of there, but it's not great elk habitat. The Fillmore Oak Creek has probably more elk on it, but again, they tend to hang out mostly on private land. And in the past, it's managed for the lower age class already, and it's an easy to draw unit, but those hunters that draw it almost always give it a not satisfactory rating when they hunt. It's just not a great elk unit to be limited entry, and we've recommended this in the past, and it has not passed. But this last year, when they redid the unit plans, they actually had the committee recommend that as well. So this is public within that unit, both sportsmen, ranchers, everybody else, and they felt that this is the best way to manage that unit as well.
Richard, so that's a done deal.
It has been voted on. Obviously, anything can be reversed, but it has, yeah, the board has voted on it. Now, in the unit plan, this is basically just to make sure it makes it into the proclamation. You know, if we get enough comment to reverse that, the board can certainly act on that if they feel like it.
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of pushback on it down there where I
live. Yeah.
And they're nearly not that concerned about whether or not it produces trophy class size bulls.
Sure.
It's a unit you can draw out with 2 or 3 points sometimes.
Right.
And they kind of like that, and they're having a hard time with this.
Sure.
Well, and part of the reason, I guess I can comment a little bit too. Part of the reason that they did this is because several years ago, you know, we had that West Desert unit that was west of Nephi out through there, and they took that out of a limited entry status and put it into any bull. And the rationale at the time was because it's not good habitat, it's not growing good bulls, and everybody down there, when you guys did that, were scratching their head. And you know what happened that hunt. I mean, they killed several bulls that were over 350 that hunt. I mean, it was an absolute slaughter. And so they're kind of thinking, are they doing the same thing with this now?
Yeah, I mean, we certainly are. They will kill good. And, you know, you say it was a slaughter. I say it was a good hunt because that's what will happen for the first couple
of
years.
When you have instead of 10 people out there with rifles, you have 100 people with rifles, it's going to be a good hunt. You're going to kill a lot of animals.
Yeah, and we anticipate doing that. Having said that, again, it's becoming an any bull unit. It's not going to stay limited entry. And on any bull units, you don't expect to see those big bulls because there are more people hunting it. So it will change management. And I do agree with you. There are those people who own private land in that area that would like to see it stay the way it is because they can gain access to those animals. But the general public, the populace, year in and year out, shows dissatisfaction with that hunt.
Okay. Well, the few that's talked to me and actually emailed me are not landowners. They're just hunters.
Sure.
And so I just needed to bring that up, and I don't know if we can do anything with changing.
Yeah, I mean, you certainly could act on it. It's not outside of your...
I'll just make a proposal and just, you know, if time's right to do that. Now, to leave that unit as is, as it has been managed as a limited entry bull unit.
And you can make that motion when the time comes.
Okay. Other questions? We'll go to the audience now. Is there anybody here who has a question for Anis on his presentation? Go ahead and come to the microphone.
Yeah, Earl Kosky, just representing myself. A question on the season dates. With the general season rifle hunt being 9 days long, what's your thoughts or the division's thoughts on, and I'm sure you guys have discussed it, rather than having a Saturday opening where you've got just hordes of crowds out on the mountain on Saturday morning going to like a Wednesday opener where, you know, certain people can only get away for 2 or 3 days regardless of whether it's a Saturday or a Wednesday, whether that would thin out the pressure in the crowd. That was just my question.
Yeah. You know, we have some Wednesday openers and some Saturday openers. I think with the general deer hunt, the rifle deer hunt, I think, you know, tradition plays more into it than anything else. It will thin out the crowd slightly, but it will disadvantage those youth that, you know, can only hunt. It will deprive them of the opener, the excitement of the opener. Whether that's good, bad, or indifferent is not mine to say. But, you know, when we floated this out there, people on the general rifle deer hunt like the Saturday opener because it's tradition and, you know, kids are... It's usually the weekend after UEA, so they could take off that Friday, get up on the mountain, and hunt. And then if we were to move it to a Wednesday, there's a whole bunch of other hunts that have to be moved around. It makes you know, you can never move one hunt without having a domino effect. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think it would matter a whole lot as far as harvest goes. It will make a few of those people that can take time off have a better hunt for that Wednesday. But the general majority of the people, I think it would affect them negatively.
Other questions? I'll go ahead and close the question period then and open it up for comments. I do have 3 comment cards on Anisa's presentation. Ken Strong, representing SFW.
Ken Strong, representing SFW Utah County. We would like to thank Anis and those working on these proposals for the job that they have done, and we stand behind the proposal that has been made. Thank you.
Thank you, Ken. Ben Lauder from the Utah Bowman's Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ben Lauder, representing Utah Bowman's Association tonight. First off, I would really like to applaud the DWR for recommending the opportunity for youth to purchase an archery deer tag after the draw if they don't draw out. We believe that is a very good opportunity to get youth involved that may not otherwise be able to be involved in a current hunting season. So we applaud the division for that recommendation, and we support it 100%. In addition, we support the remainder of the recommendation as well, but I wanted to point that out specifically. Also, I'd like to touch on season dates real quick. The thought occurred to me earlier tonight, and then again when the gentleman behind me just asked about the deer season or the general rifle deer opener. The last 2 years, we were going through a process looking at a complete restructure of hunting season dates that was kind of pushed aside last year when the unit by unit came up. As I recall, the season restructure was going very well. It was receiving a lot of very favorable comments at these meetings. And I understand why we didn't do it at the time because of the unit by unit, but I would like to just put that thought back out there. Let's keep that in the back of our minds, and when the time is right, I would really like to see us pursue that that option again. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Anise, do you want to comment?
Yeah, just to follow up on that, I just want to update Ben on kind of where we are with that. At the Wildlife Board work session after this RAC board process, so we'll have a work session and then the board meeting that deals with these issues, they've asked us to basically bring that back and kind of refresh the board's memory, and then hopefully we'll take it out again. It'll probably won't be implemented, you know, I don't know if it'll be 2014 or 2015, but we'll kind of see what timeline they want us to pursue that at. So it is something that's still in our plans.
Thank you. Wynn Zandell.
I'm Wynn Zundel. I'm representing myself and muzzleloaders in general in the state of Utah. And Mr. Oswald, I appreciate you and the committee's hearing me out here. It really doesn't have a whole lot to do with Anise's presentation, but it's a proposal that I sent to you all about making more of a statewide muzzleloader antelope hunt in the state of Utah. That's for the public here to know. What I'm about to say today is just a synopsis of what that proposal was all about. I presented this same idea to the Northern RAC last evening, and they passed unanimously a task that they're going to bring before the Wildlife Board to have the DWR look into this idea. Basically what it is we have roughly 15,000 pretty serious muzzleload hunters here in the state of Utah. I'm just one. I have a desire to take an antelope buck with my muzzleloader. And I could apply for an any weapons tag, and if I got that, I could choose my muzzleloader to take that animal. It's my belief, though, when I'm hunting, I like to wear my buckskin outfit, and blaze orange and buckskin just don't seem to mix. So if we could have a separate hunt for our muzzleload antelope, I for one would love it and appreciate it, and there's others. I'd like to read my last statement, and then I'll get out of your hair. I'd like to ask this council for a motion to recommend to the Wildlife Board that they establish an action log item to the division to investigate the additional muzzleload pronghorn hunting opportunities in the state of Utah. I thank you for your time.
Great. Thank you very much, Wynn. Is there anyone else that would like to make a comment on this action item tonight? If not, I'll go ahead and close the comment period and bring it back to the RAC for your deliberation and recommendations to the board. I think with regard to the last item, I think I would be willing to accept a motion similar to the one that was made in the northern region, that we basically ask the Wildlife Board to put Mr. Zindel's recommendation on their action item log. The board would then take it up, and then if they feel like they would like to do that, it would then go through the process and bring, and it would eventually come back to the RACs for opportunity for the public to make a comment on it, and for the RACs and then the board to ultimately have some disposition on it. So, anybody willing to make that motion? Okay, Chris made the motion and seconded by Tim that we basically pass Mr. Zindel's motion to ask the board to make that an action item on their log. Further discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? That passes unanimously, and we appreciate you being here tonight. Do you live here in?
I live in Willard.
You live in Willard, so you've come a long way. Well, we appreciate you going to the Northern RAC meeting and coming here tonight, and we wish you good luck with the board, and we'll see what happens with it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. RAC members, what's your pleasure on the action item? Richard?
Well, I'd just like to, and really the reason that I do this is because of the people that have called me and talked to me about this. And I told them that I would represent that voice and how whatever we, you know, the RAC decides, they decide. So, but I'd like to make a proposal to leave the Fillmore Oak Creek South Limited Entry Elk Unit as is, to not change it to an any bull unit. And that would be my proposal.
Okay. Motion by Richard. Is there a second on that?
I'm about to ask a question, Fred.
Okay,
before,
Chris?
Before nobody seconds
it. Anise, and I hate to put you on the spot, but do you happen to know what that satisfaction rating has been, any given time period on that unit?
Yeah, I've looked. I mean, I can give you a rough idea. So the way our satisfaction index is, it's 1 through 5. A 5 means they had an exceptional time. It's always been in the 2 to 2.5. So it's never been above, you know, satisfied. And it varies. You know, some years they get into them, and then it all depends on how good harvest success is. So when people harvest, they have good satisfaction. When they don't, they don't. So, and we manage that for, as I mentioned, the lowest age bull class. So it's not managed for high quality antlers, but there are some good ones out there, as everybody knows. Any unit where we manage it for limited entry is going to have some good bulls.
And I don't know off the top of my head. Sorry, one more question. But
no worries.
You know, how's that unit been performing against the average age of harvest? Against the harvest objective, I should say.
Yeah, so it's been pretty close. We're starting to bring the ages down on that unit, so it's you know, it's probably still above a little bit. I don't have the data here, but it, you know, it's an average unit for that age class.
Okay, we have a motion by Richard on the floor, and I'm looking for a second.
Can I ask it?
Yeah, sure.
Is there any other factors involved in this? Like, is there a lot of private property in
Yeah.
this unit?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there is. That's one of the main reasons we're doing it, is because of that. Yeah. Basically, it's a good way to deal with depredation.
That was yeah. Going to be my other question.
Yeah, and, yeah,
a
and
lot
that's
of damages to haystacks, hay fields.
Yeah, I mean, the area doesn't have. It's not great elk habitat. So what ends up happening in areas like that is the elk suck into the agricultural area.
So they're causing problems.
Yeah.
In
right. There are problems. And that's the main reason we did the Oak Creek North. Similarly, is we had, you know, catastrophic depredation on corn, and that's the reason that went that way as well. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't because we wanted to kill off the elk herd by any means, but it was a way for us to deal with depredation.
Anise, one other question that I have about when we have those problems with those private lands like that, were those landowners offered permits that they could sell?
Not at that time, and it doesn't.
See, and I say that as a way to really satisfy something.
Yeah, but on the Oak Creek South, there are landowner permits. The way the program works is, you know, they have to form an association, and then they get a certain percentage of the limited entry permits. And they're aware of this, that this change took place, and they were involved in the committee. So they know they're losing that revenue as well, and they're willing to deal with that if they can, basically now they can go just buy a permit and hunt their property, which to a lot of them is a big draw. And it'll be a good hunt for a few years, and then it'll just kind of moderate and be an okay.
It'll become like the West Desert unit is right now. You might see an elk.
Yeah.
You might not.
Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of what that committee in that area that included a lot of people, including sportsmen, private landowners, ranchers, the Forest Service, BLM, you know, they decided that in a committee, and we've, as I mentioned, we've already presented this to this RAC and to the board, and it's been approved. So, not to say that it can't be changed, as I mentioned, it certainly can, but I think there was a lot of work, you know, groundwork done and effort put into this. It wasn't something we just, you know, thought of last night and floated it. So.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so we've got a motion on the floor by Richard. And I'm looking for a second, going once, going twice, and for lack of a second, that motion dies. So we're looking for a motion on the action item, Bucks, Bulls, a season dates and application deadline.
Motion to accept the division recommendations as presented.
Okay, a motion by Chris to accept the division's recommendations as presented. A second by Matt. Further discussion? Richard?
I have a question, though. Is that this also include the adding the late any weapon hunts on the Wasatch, Nebo, and Deep Creeks? This motion includes that?
It does.
I've got some pushback on that, too. What the concern is that if you add a late hunt on Nebo, and I understand, and I think it's a really, really valid point, is to try to split those tags up so we don't have so many people, you know, during the any weapon season. My concern is, and their concern was, does the late hunt, and some years I think we'd have to admit that is a huge, that's a high success hunt. Because, especially on Nebo, because basically we know where those elk get pushed to when there's snow. Okay, when they come down, or if they get, you know, if there's something, a snowstorm high, you can see them from a paved road anywhere on that unit. So that's a problem that they're concerned with. Some years, like this year, you probably wouldn't have that problem at all. And so my question is, maybe we should, you know, we take those. I think there's about 40 any weapon hunts on that unit right now. And I don't know if you're going to take 10. I don't know what you're kind of thinking about that.
And I can address that. In our statewide plan, it says any unit that has a late and early hunt cannot have more than 65% in the early hunt. So if we go by that, they'll likely be about, you know, whatever, 35% of the tags. You say there's, what, 40?
There's approximately 40.
So 3 times 4, 12, 13 tags will be in the late hunt.
Okay. And my concern is I think right now, I don't know about this year, but over the past few years, the success rate on that any weapon hunt has been about 70%, right in that area. Mm-hmm. That's more because there's fewer elk, but you know that's coming back up. But so my concern is that we don't increase the harvest on that again. Yeah. While we're starting to build that, try to get that age class back up and where it ought to be.
Sure.
So I would just consider maybe, you know, cutting that a couple of tags off of that, you know, overall, and then not having right. So many.
And the tag allocation does always consider harvest success. So that'll be built into the process. So,
okay.
You know, so if you get 90% success and you only want to kill X amount, you put only X amount of permits out. So All of that is built into the process. If you're killing 100%, you can adjust for it. So it's not something we worry about. I mean, it is a limited entry hunt. People take a long time to draw these. So we do actually hope that they harvest, and then we'll adjust the permits accordingly to make sure that our ages stay where they need to be.
Okay, and I think that the real point with this is that people, that we are able to tell them the rationale behind it.
Oh, yeah.
And understand that, you know, the DWR really is looking after the best interest of the health of the herd as well as the hunters, and they try to bring that together in the best they can. So.
Yeah, and I hope people realize that. I mean, that's kind of our main reason for existing, is to make sure we have healthy herds and happy public. So
here's where we are, Richard. We've got a motion and a second to approve the action item as presented. Your options are to let your concerns be known in the minutes as you'd express them now, or if you want to offer an amendment, you're certainly...
But I could actually do that when we have a meeting about permit numbers, when they present it.
That would be another opportunity.
Yeah. So that's
right now, it's either a late hunt or not.
Right. And I agree with the late hunt because you're not increasing permits, and you spread that pressure out, and I think it helps.
Great. Glad we had this conversation. Okay. Further discussion? All those in favor? Opposed? And that passes unanimously. And Anise, thank you very much for your presentation. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Move on to the next action item, CWMU management plan and permit numbers for 13. That's going to be presented by Scott McFarland, wildlife program manager for CWMU and private lands. And Scott is new to the position. And congratulations on your appointment, and we look forward to working with you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As he said, my name is Scott McFarland. I'm the private lands public wildlife coordinator for the division, and tonight I will be presenting the 2013 Buck Bull CWMU and Landowner Association recommendations for the division. Before I get into this, it'd probably be helpful if I explain basically what we do with applications for CWMUs. I'll be starting with the CWMU program first. We have basically three types of applications. A new application is one that obviously it's brand new. It's never been on our system before. It could also be one that has changed land ownership greater than 34%, or changed a land boundary or added acreage greater than 34%, which kicks it into a new application, even if they're currently a CWMU. And if they do this, they have to reapply and start as a new application. Or if they didn't have a... They might have been in the system. They may have had a CWMU in the previous years, but they've let it lapse a year, and they have to apply as a new cooperative wildlife management unit. Another one is a renewal. The CWMU program, the CWMUs are renewed or are issued for 3 years, and after that 3 years up, they would be required to do a renewal application. And the last one would be a change application. We have it built into the system that they can apply for changes within the CWMU. The things that require RAC and board approval are permit numbers, season dates, and percentage, their split changes, the allocation of the permits. Those all require RAC and board approval, and that's what we will go through tonight with these. So this year for 2013 season, we had eight new applications. Two of those were due to land ownership changes. They basically sold the property, and there's a new owner for greater than 34% of the property was sold. One had an increase of acreage of 34%. They added about 7,000 acres to their CWMU, which kicked them into the new category again. Two did not have CORs in 2012, but they were previously CWMUs, and we had three brand new applications. Now, we had 10 CWMUs that required renewal for 2013 to 2015. 8 CWMUs submitted change applications requiring the RAC and board approval, and 4 CWMUs have moose permit reductions that were requested by the DWR due to they're in a limited entry unit for moose, obviously, and the limited entry permits were decreased. We also had the need to decrease the private permits too. And we had one discontinued application. It was incorporated or added into an adjoining CWMU, which makes 122 total CWMUs for the 2013 season. Recommended. An overview of this, we have, like I said, I have 120 proposed CWMUs statewide, and it's broken down by region here. The northern region takes the lion's share of this. There's 71 CWMUs proposed for that region. Northeastern would be 7, central region would be 13, southeastern region 16, and southern region 13. In the program, we have over 2.18 million acres enrolled in the program, of which 97% of that is all private land, and 444 landowners participate in the CWMU program. Overall permit numbers statewide, for deer, there would be 1,983 permits. Private permits and public permits would be 262. Management buck deer permits, which are all in the southern region, were proposed 4 private permits and 1 public permit. And elk, 903 private permits, 137 public permits. Pronghorn, 74 private permits, and 53 public permits. Moose, we would have 49 private permits and 31 public permits, for a total of 3,013 private permits statewide for all the species, and 484 public permits, which constitute about 14% of the total permits issued to the CWMUs. Okay, I will go over the recommendations by region. We'll start with the northern region. They had 3 new applications, the Strawberry Ridge, Whites Valley, and Sage Valley Outfitters, and we recommend approval of all of those. The Strawberry Ridge CWMU is the one that added 7,000 acres to their CWMU. They also added, as a result of that, added deer, elk, moose, and pronghorn permits. And we do recommend approval of that one. We had 6 renewal permits: the Junction Valley, Rabbit Creek, Pine Canyon, Wood Canyon, Bastion Ranch, and Cotton Thomas. These were all CWMUs that ended their 3-year application period and were required to reapply, and we recommend approval of all those. Change applications, there were quite a few. There's 7 change applications that were submitted to by the northern region. Is it 7? Yeah, it's okay. And there's Park Valley, they're adding a pronghorn permit, and they asked to change their deer season dates. Normally when they change a deer season date, it's because they go from, they have a date where they can go from September 1st to October 31st, or they can go from September 11th to November 10th. And that's what they're requesting, to go to November 10th. The Deseret CWMU, probably the largest one in the state, are requesting additional deer and elk permits, both public and private, and they wanted to change their deer season date to go to the November 10th date. They had been going to October 31st. They're requesting an elk variance to go to the 20th of November to take care of a problem with elk that are trying to cross and mix into the Wyoming elk herds. And we have some disease concerns on that. We recommend approval of that. The double cone asked only for a bull permit split change. A lot of times some of the CWMUs have such low permit numbers that They fall into the 90-10, 85-15, or 80-20 split without even knowing it. And they just ask for a bull permit split change. What that does for them, it allows the CWMU to retain a portion of the antlerless permits that are allocated to the units. The West Hills, they ask for an increase in public permits. That sounds a little bit strange, but they added public property that was completely surrounded by the unit. They actually decreased one of their private permits and added a public permit voluntarily to do that. Twin Peaks Goose Creek just asked for an increase of one elk permit. State Corner increased, I believe that was 10 elk permits. They asked for an increase in that. And the Hardscrabble asked for a change in bull elk split from an 85-15 split to a 90-10. And they also increase their elk permits. And we recommend approval of all of those. We had four cooperative wildlife management units in the northern region. They were all in one unit in particular, the Ogden unit, where we had a reduction of moose permits on the limited entry moose permits. And so we requested a reduction from the CWMUs also. That's public and private within the CWMU permits. The two of those are split recommendations. The Broadmouth and Bear Spring, they agreed with that and recommend approval of those. South Canyon and Sharp Mountain, we have a split recommendation. The landowners basically didn't want to give up those permits. So Northeastern applications, we had two new applications. The Crowfoot, recommend approval of that. The Circle Bar Ranch, the division recommends denial of that application based on the configuration of the CWMU. There was basically two portions of it that were joined by residential property, and it fits the requirements to make it a CWMU, but it doesn't fit the spirit of what we're trying to do with this. It has very difficult boundaries to enforce, and so the region is recommending denial of that. Central region applications, we have Deer Creek, it's a new one, and three renewals, Chris's Creek, Crab Creek, and Heartland West. Recommend approval of all those except for Crab Creek. There are some problems with the application. There are some misrepresentations on property ownership and the region, and we are the division is recommending denial of that one. Southeastern region, there's two applications. There was a new one for the JB Ranch. This is one of the ones that it changed ownership greater than 34%. It was also one of the older CWMUs that was under acreage. There's under the 10,000 acre minimum to include elk within the CWMU. And we do have a process in place where they can apply for a variance. It has gone through the majority of the division made a recommendation that they reapprove that because they have operated successfully in the past. And provided a very good hunting experience for public and private hunters, and they've cooperated very well with the antlerless harvest, and they recommend approval of that. It has also gone through the majority vote of the CWMU Advisory Committee, and they also recommend approval of the variance. Summit Point is just a change, and they increased elk permits, and the division recommends approval of that. Southern region had one new and one renewal. The grazing pasture is the same thing as the one previous where they changed ownership. It has been a CWMU that has operated almost since the start of the program. It has operated very, very well. The region and the division recommends approval of this variance and of the application. And it has also gone through the majority vote of the CWMU Advisory Committee that recommended for that also. And the Johnson Mountain Ranch, we recommend, it's a renewal, we recommend approval of that. So that concludes the CWMU recommendations.
Thank you, Scott. Questions from the RAC members? For Scott? Chris?
Scott, just a question. In the scenarios where CWMUs are asking for an increase in tags or permits, is there an impact to the surrounding public units?
Normally not, because in almost every case the CWMUs that have requested tags, an increase in tags on this go around, there are such small numbers that most of those are under 10 permits. There's a few of them that are 15 to 20 permits, but normally the impact that the CWMUs have on surrounding landowners, surrounding properties, is that they increase populations because they are very restrictive on their hunting. So I'd have to answer that. Probably not. They don't really impact the surrounding populations. If anything, they help them, but the extra tag doesn't help, but the CWMUs do.
Tim.
So in terms of RAC action, when you give us a recommendation which says split.
Right.
It's kind of like a no recommendation.
Okay.
The
split recommendation, the division is recommending a reduction in permits that was in the CWMU, the packet there. That is our recommendation. The recommendation, the split is that the landowner does not, or the CWMU operator does not agree with that. They would like to retain the permits that they had originally issued on their management plan and their application.
So I should read that as it really says approve the change.
Approve the change, yes. That would be correct.
Okay, I just
try
to figure out what I'm supposed
to. Okay, thank you for clarifying that.
Scott, I noticed as you were going through the individual CWMUs that there seemed to be a number of them that were deer and elk that were less than 10,000 acres.
That's correct.
And I guess that requires a variance in order for them to be an elk CWMU without having 10,000 acres.
It doesn't require a variance. Most of the ones that are under 10,000 acres, in fact, all of them up until these two that we just mentioned, were grandfathered into the program. They were allowed to have an elk CWMU before the 10,000 acre minimum was instated. So if they change ownership or change property acreage more than 34% and or do something that kicks them into the new application category, then they have to start all over again. They have to apply for a variance, and if they haven't performed very, very well to CWMU, most of the time I would think that they would not be recommended for that variance.
But, so in the case where they're not grandfathered and they are less than 10,000 acres, what criteria do you use to approve them as an elk CWMU? Why should they receive the variance?
In the rule, it says that if they had, they don't have to apply for a variance every year as long as they operated and had a certificate of registration the year prior. If they let that lapse a year, then that would make them apply for a new CWMU and they would lose their grandfather status. They originally were brought into the program, and they were okay for the acreage. And so what we did is grandfathered all those CWMUs into the program. But if any changes that were contrary to the rule took place, then they had to reapply and go through the process. About 3 or 4 years ago, we put the process in there so they could apply for a variance. It used to be that once they let that lapse, they could not get a variance, but it is in rule that we can do that now.
Okay. Other questions from RAC members? Sarah.
I noticed that a lot of the elk permits are or they're asking to have them increase. Is that due to added acreage in some of the CWMUs, or because of an increase in the elk herd, or other reasons?
It's probably split. Some of those is because they did add acreage. Adding acreage is not something that requires board or RAC action if it's under the 34%. But some of them were due to adding acreage, and some of them just because of a wildlife population increases. We have been having wildlife population increases, particularly in elk statewide. So they're requesting more elk permits as a result of that.
Other questions? Carl.
Just want to make sure I'm reading this correctly. On the two split decisions, you're recommending they go from three total moose permits, two public, two private, one public on both units, down to one private. Am I reading that right?
Yes. Basically, how this happened, what we have to do is put this into a formula, the same as a landowner association. And the CWMUs and landowner associations within a limited entry unit, they have to, let's see how to explain this. They constitute a percentage of the wildlife habitat for that species within the unit. And so if there's, for example, if they have 10 permits allocated for that unit and they have 50% of the land within that unit, then they would qualify for 50% of those permits. The 50% would go to the CWMU for the public and private permits, and 50% would go out to the public draw for the limited entry unit. So what happened on this is that the overall unit number had dropped, the total number for the unit, and so we had to correspondingly drop the CWMU permits also. And what they did, this is the second year of their application. All of these are in the Ogden unit in the northern region. This is the second year of their application. 2013 would be. 2012 was the first year. Most of those, the two that were split recommendations, had two public and two private permits for 2012. And in order to keep the splits right, in 2013, they requested two private permits and one public permit for 2013 and 2014. And the decrease comes when we can't do it for 2012, but we decreased permits for 2013. It went to one public, one private. And in 2014, it went to one private and zero public permits to make the splits come out right.
I have a question.
Matt.
I'd like to know a little bit more about the ones you denied. You said it was a boundary issue, a hard boundary to control. There's a lot of hard boundaries. I don't know the people, but curious.
That was in the northeast region. It was the, I can't remember the name of it. I have to back up. But
it's like Bone Creek what
that was the region recommended denial of it because there was two pieces of property that were applied for the CWMU. Neither one of those were large enough to even constitute a deer CWMU with a minimum of 5,000 acres.
Were they adjoining?
And to join them up, they used pieces of residential property, which technically fits the qualifications to be a CWMU. But then additionally to that, they had boundaries that were very, very hard to define and would be very hard to enforce. So that's why they recommended denial on that.
But if it's private property and the boundaries are private, they already have to enforce those boundaries.
Right. What they try and do is make good enforceable boundaries. That's why we don't allow checkerboard squares all over for the original 10,000 acres. We don't allow corner-to-corner properties. And this was a corner-to-corner piece of property. It was actually separated that used 10 acres of a residence, of several residences to join it. And so that's why they're recommending denial.
And is anybody here representing them?
They've been notified on all the split recommendations and the recommended denials of applications. They've all been notified that they can they can come state their case and right, and so normally what they do is they'll show up in the region where it is, the region where the unit is.
And on the acreage, these are all grandfathered in, or is it possible to put new applications in under the 10,000 acres for the elk?
It's possible, according to the CWMU rule, to put a new application in and ask for a variance, but so far we haven't had any of them do that. So if they're under the 10,000 acre minimum for elk and moose, they're going to, it's generally, right now it's because they've been grandfathered into the program.
But it is possible.
Yeah, it is possible. It is allowed in the rule to do that.
Matt?
Is the Deer Creek unit a new applicant? And if so, where is that?
Let me look that up. Yeah, it's in Central Region. Yeah, if you would, Dale.
The Deer Creek CWMU was actually an old CWMU, but it was discontinued years ago, and they want to bring it back to life. Basically, it starts there on Highway 89 in the Wallsburg Turn, and if you head west, it goes about down to Deer Creek Dam, and then it cuts south up over the mountain, comes back around down through Sunday Canyon in Wallsburg. So that's about where it is.
Other questions? Questions from the audience for Scott? Seeing none, I'll close the question period then. And I don't have any comment cards. Is there anybody here tonight that would like to make a comment on the action item? Seeing none, I'll go ahead and close the comment period then and open it up to the RAC for your discussion and recommendation to the Wildlife Board. Matt?
I make a motion that we accept the CWMU management plan and permit numbers for 2013 as presented by the DWR.
Okay. A motion by Matt, second by Richard. Further discussion? All those in favor? Opposed, and that passes unanimously, and we're down to the last action item, which is landover permit numbers for 2013.
Okay. This is the Landowner Association permit numbers for the 2013 season. It would probably be best, I don't know if everybody understands the Landowner Association landowner permit program, so I thought I'd introduce that and explain that a little bit. Basically, the intent of the Landowner Association program is to provide private landowners that have habitat for deer, elk, and pronghorn in a limited entry unit with an opportunity to be able to procure permits, a restricted number of permits, basically for compensation for to them. There's several reasons that we did this, and one was to encourage private landowners to manage for wildlife on their property, and another would be to compensate them for providing habitat for these big game species, and a third reason would be to, in a lot of cases, we've been able to increase the permit or the wildlife numbers in those units as a result of it. And basically how it works is that in a limited entry unit, if there's enough people, landowners, that can put together a simple majority of 51% of the private lands in that unit, they can apply for and usually receive a landowner association permits for that. So in the central region, there's two. There's the Deep Creek, which is an elk landowner association, and they apply for, and they've applied for one permit this year. And the Vernon, which is a deer landowner association, and they're requesting 37 permits. They qualified for and requested 37 permits, and that's what the division is recommending on that. So I'll go through that. The statewide 2013 Landowner Association applications. We had 14 applications were received. The DWR recommends approval of 10 of the applications as received, and we have four split recommendations on those, and all those are in the southern region on the split recommendations. Total, the number of permits, there are out of the 14 landowner associations, there's 127 deer vouchers requested or applied for, 30 management buck vouchers, which are all in the southern region, 77 elk vouchers, and 7 pronghorn vouchers. And as I said, we had 4 split recommendations. I was supposed to get a reaction of 2 bulls button heads here, but none of the split recommendations came out of the central region. As I said, there were 2 landowner associations applied for in the central region. We recommended approval of both of those. These are all in the southern region. The Pavant Mountain Landowner Association requested 7 bull elk permits. They qualified for 5 under the rule that we have, and the Division of Wildlife is recommending 5 permits. And I'll go through the reason for these at the end here. Ponsagant Landowner Wildlife Association requested 4 management buck deer permits. They qualify for 3, and the division is recommending 3. South Fork of the Sevier River Landowner Association is a pronghorn landowner association. They requested 6. They qualify for 4, and the division is recommending 4. Indian Peaks Landowner Association is a bull elk. They requested 3. They qualified for 3, and we recommend 3. They would like to have them premium permits, but it's not allowed for by rule. The other ones, is the reason for the decrease in the permits. In every case, the permits they requested were the permits they had from the previous year, and because of the reduction in in the limited entry landowner permits, their permits were reduced also. That's the reason for the disagreement on there. So, and that concludes the Landowner Association presentation.
Questions for Scott? Richard.
What's the parameters for qualifying for a landowner association permit? I mean, acreage?
It's based on acreage. Like I said, the landowner association has to come up with 51% of the private lands, a minimum of 51% of the private lands within the unit. And in the limited entry unit, there are so many permits that are allocated for that unit. And whatever percentage of land the landowner association has is basically, with the formula we have, is the number that they qualify for. So if they have 25% of the land within the unit, the landowner association does, then they would qualify for 25% of the permits that are allocated for that unit. There's other things that can come into play, like if they harbor more than 50% or have an unusually high amount of the wildlife that occupies that part, then that can be adjusted that way also on the private lands.
So, do these private lands have to be adjoined?
No, they don't. They don't have to be contiguous. They just have to sign up. One of the provisions of the landowner association is also that they have to let an equal number of permits of the limited entry permits hunt on those private lands also, unless they apply for a variance for that. But to my knowledge, I don't think any of them have applied for that variance.
Is there any of those on the Monroe?
Yes, there is.
There is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those are the highly coveted permits.
And they control, or they're part of this 51% of all the private lands?
Yes, they are.
Really?
Yeah. The Moreau, I'll have to put my glasses on here. I can tell you about the Moreau here. The Monroe, Mountain Landowner Association has 63% of the private lands. It's for bull elk, and they qualify for four landowner permits. What they can do, they can sell the permits, they can divide them up amongst their members. They're basically a voucher that they can do with whatever they want.
Is there a list of those private lands somewhere?
On the application, there is. So they provide a map and a list of all the private lands that are in that on the applications. So the permits are able to hunt on not only the limited entry permit, but they can hunt on the private lands part of it also. So.
Other questions? Matt?
This may be a dumb question. So these are acreages that are much smaller than CWMUs. Is that right? I mean, why aren't these properties just put in CWMUs? What's the big difference?
One of the criteria for it is that the properties, if they qualify for a CWMU, they're not eligible to get into a landowner association. That's one of the criteria in the rule. If they do qualify, if they're over 10,000 acres, then they don't qualify for it. So, and some of these landowner associations have a lot of small landowners included in it. One of the benefits the division sees from the landowner association is that a lot of times the damage payments go away from the individual landowners because of the revenue that they make from the sale of the permits on these units.
Other questions? Sarah.
So you answered my question on selling the vouchers. They can sell them.
Yes, they can.
Okay, and does some of that revenue come back to the state? It sounds like with the damage, where you're not paying out for some of the damages, that's an incentive. But is the state gaining revenue, or what are some of the incentives?
They have to pay the permit cost. We get the money from the permit. But the revenue that they get from selling the voucher or that hunting opportunity goes directly back to the landowner association. So we get the same revenue amount that we would if it was just included within the limited entry permit, only it's just going to the landowner association. But the revenue from the sale of permit goes to the division.
So any other benefits that the state sees? I mean, why do we give these...
Well, as I said before, the incentive is to make the wildlife valuable on a piece of private property for these. So, and the benefit to the private landowners is that they get revenue for it, or they get to use it themselves. They have the option to do that, and it's also providing compensation to them for providing habitat on private lands for the wildlife. And as I said before, some of the benefits are we're able to increase population in those limited entry unit as a result of doing this. So that's another benefit, which would theoretically it would increase the number of permits available to the public and increase revenue to the division also. And the other benefit is that the landowners enrolled in this, any revenue that they derive from the sale of these permits is automatically deducted from any damage payment claims that they would make, and that's an agreement that they enter into.
Scott, so you mentioned that an equal number of limited entry permit holders are entitled to hunt on the private lands, same number that they're issued.
That's correct, which is a benefit to the. Yeah, basically they can hunt the whole unit. So if it's posted no trespassing, that would be their first indication not to go there, I think. So because obviously that would be one that would not be entered into the landowner association. Yes.
I'm involved in one of these, and it is a good deal for the landowner. It's a landowner that doesn't have enough property to go into a CWMU. So it does work out for all the landowners in the association. So it's not as wicked or mean as you might think it does. Yeah. You know, the state still gets revenue for the tag. The landowner makes something off the tag. And as a landowner, you cannot run wildlife off your private property. And so it just gives you something for having the wildlife on your property. Just, you know, it's a give back, more or less.
The CWMUs, they're actually paid. Do they actually gain, or does the state pay them to gain in the CWMU?
No.
Yeah, it's a voucher they give us. We can use it ourselves, or we can sell it to the public.
Yeah,
it's a give back to the landowner, and I think they ought to help the landowner. Like out on the West Desert, all the premium this time of year, everything's going down. There's very little green grass. They're going into the fields, the meadows, and it's a give back to the landowner. But another question, since we went to this 30-unit deal, isn't everything a premium unit? Deer unit? Because I didn't draw a deer tag.
Anise?
So if we got...
He's the expert.
If we got...
The general season units remain general season units, even though there's 30 of them now. So they don't qualify for the landowner association permits. You know, anything is possible.
Maybe to answer your question on the CWMUs, no, they aren't paid by the state. It's an agreement that is entered into with the state, and the benefit that the CWMU gets from entering into a CWMU contract with the state is that they get an extended season. They can hunt multiple species at the same time. Basically, for deer, they have a 61-day season, and elk, it starts September 1st to October 31st with extensions for archery hunts before that. And the benefit the state gets is that it's private property, which normally previously has had no public hunters on it, gets a certain percentage of those permits. The revenue that the state derives from that is also from the sale of the permits. But the CWMUs, like the landowner associations, can allocate they can give the vouchers to anybody, but they can sell them, they can keep them for themselves, whatever they want to do. Yeah, normally it is. So.
Okay, other questions, Rack? Questions for the audience? Come on up and introduce yourself to us and ask your question.
I'm Terry Range. I just got a question for you on what you said about the landowner permits.
Mm-hmm.
I'll use Vernon.
Okay.
Okay, so there's 37 permits. Now, if there's not a CMU in Vernon, I'll say for a 25,000-acre piece of property down there, how do you find out who is in an association to ask? I mean, because a lot of that property down there is posted as no trespassing. Yeah, you know, that's my whole. I don't. You know, we don't know where to hunt. You know, we're taught to.
Yeah, by rule, if it's posted no trespassing, it shouldn't be in the association unless they've applied for a variance. And I don't think the Vernon unit has applied for a variance, have they?
He has to allow for the same number of tags that he's gotten. It's not the association as a whole, but it's the individual landowner. He has to let somebody that had of the public hunt on his property. But the landowners can provide or make their land no trespass. It's just that if they've gotten a tag, they have to let somebody else from the public.
But is this public knowledge? I'm saying, okay.
It's in the rule.
No.
It's in, how do we find,
I think,
find out? How does an individual find out that Mr. Smith has a tag and he's got his land posted?
I give the name of the landowner association's chairman.
Yeah.
I can probably answer this. A lot of the property he's seeing that's posted isn't in the landowner association because you have to have 640 acre contiguous acres to be in the landowner association.
Right.
So if, pardon me?
That's a different landowner thing. 640 acres has nothing to do with the land, this landowner association we're talking about.
Is this the Vernon he's talking about?
The Vernon Landowners Association has its own bylaws and they divvy out permits according to those bylaws. The general season units.
To qualify for a Vernon landowner tag.
That's a bylaw.
This is how they do it in Vernon. A lot of the property that you might see being posted, the people, they're hay fields, and I feel bad for the hay guys because those are the ones that are taking the biggest hit on the deer. But they don't have the 640 acres, so they do not qualify to get one of these landowner tags.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe not for you guys, but
yeah.
But that's how.
I think we're maybe talking about two different things.
Let me explain. The landowners association, each landowners association has a bylaw, and the bylaws of that association that people put their signature on is how they divvy out those permits. The Vernon unit's bylaw is 640 acres minimum to qualify for a tag. Now they also, because there are a lot of little landowners in Vernon that receive damage from deer, they have allowed landowners to group their land to make 640 acres or more, but those landowners have to decide amongst themselves how they're gonna divvy out the tag if one of them should get it. And so the 640 acres on that one is the bylaws. And I think what you're asking is how you know whose land that you can go on.
If it's posted, you can't go.
If it's posted, all crop lands are divvied or said to be off limits unless you get permission. That's a different rule.
Yeah. So if I may,
the easiest way to find out where you can hunt on a landowner association, you call a biologist, he gives you the name and number of the landowner association president, you call them, and then figure out what land you can access to under that. That's the approach. That's the approach.
That's generally how I do it because they're the only ones that really know who drew the tag in the landowners association. We don't know who actually got those tags.
Yeah, I know people get upset.
If you want the Vernon guy, Jim Gallons is the guy to talk to.
He's, I'm just curious because you go down there and you drive through these places and you got posted here, posted here, posted there.
Yeah, they're allowed to post their property, but if they receive a tag and go hunt,
you never know. I mean, I hate to say it, but I
see on the public, so, then they have to let
happen in my meeting.
Well, this kind of, are you talking? They're talking about the town of Vernon. They're driving through the hayfields. It's a town. They shouldn't have people.
I'm talking about a lot of the property. I know is farmland out there.
Yeah.
It's posted.
There's two. The bylaws got.
You don't know whether he has a tag or not.
Okay, I'm going to cut this conversation off here. And if you guys want to talk about the Vernon unit, you're welcome to stay afterwards.
I
and
use the Vernon unit as an example.
Right.
It applies to all the units that have landowner tags.
Yeah, Anise, we thank you for your suggestion that the easiest way to do it is to contact the biologist and find out who the landowner association president is. Thank you. Other questions? I'm going to close the question period then and bring it back. I have no comment cards. Anyone like to make a comment on this presentation? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the comment period and bring it back to the RAC for your discussion and recommendation. Larry.
I make a motion to accept as presented.
Okay, a motion by Larry to accept the permit numbers as presented. Second by Chris. Further discussion? All those in favor? And that passes unanimously, and that's the end of our action items tonight. But I would like to allow the RAC members just a few minutes to give Anise and the Wildlife Board basically their feedback on, from their point of view, how the 30 units went this year, how their own hunt went this year, and basically if you want to offer antidotes, that's fine. I know this is not scientific. I'll just start off by saying I applied for elk and open elk and deer in the northern region in the East Canyon Chalk Creek, and all of those in my party with the deer were successful. I think that was one of the few units in the state that actually was undersubscribed. My hunt went well this year. I killed a five-point elk on the fifth day of the hunt and was pleased with the hunt, and then our deer hunt started a little slow, but like many of the rest of you, we got some snow in the middle of the hunt. That moved the deer around. We ended up also being successful. My hunt last year, I hunted every day and never saw a deer to shoot, and this year I hunted 90 minutes and shot a four-point buck. So there you go.
It must be working.
Life is good from the Oswald point of view. I can't offer any feedback really on unit by unit because I was in one of those units that was really undersubscribed, and so I didn't have any feedback, positive or negative, in terms of how that unit worked. Obviously positive because it's mostly private land. And so you have to have access to the private land to really even apply for a permit in that unit. So who else would like to share?
You know I want it.
Richard.
Nebo in the park that we hunted, and I hunted with one of my boys and, you know, a grandson, and he was successful in taking a three-point. But you know, this idea about the youth hunt and all the opportunities, if there aren't animals there, I don't care how much opportunity you get them. And that's what will hook him, and this kid's hooked now. My grandson's hooked. He had a great time. And so that's, you know, all this opportunity stuff, you know. It's not fun to go tromping around the hills with Grandpa for two or three days and see two does. Okay? Success makes all the difference. Opportunity like that. Anyway, one other thing, too. I wanted to know if the division's been dropping off moose on the Nebo.
Yes.
You have? Well, they're showing up. Okay, these are the reports I got. I saw a cow and two calves in Pole Canyon, okay, this summer. There were two bulls that they had to chase back up into the mountain above Mona. There were a cow, and he said three calves. I don't know if there was another cow there with him or not. They didn't see. It was in the Nebo Creek area. And then there was one big mature bull in that sawmill Golden Ridge area. Figured it was 40 inches wide, big palmated. The other side was palmated but split right in the middle. Palmated. So I don't know what's going on. You guys think they can live down there. They seem to appear, and then in a few years they all die off. So anyway. So that's when, well, we went down into the bottom of the sawmill after we got a little bit of snow, and unfortunately, we saw more coyotes than we saw deer. I mean, and in the snow, there had to be at least four coyotes in this pack, and they were trailing a doe and a couple of fawns right through the snow. So, and we never saw another deer, you know, the rest of the time. So, hopefully, that predator program is going to work. So, thanks.
Thank you, Richard.
And by the way, there's way too many hunters on Nebo and East. I knew it happened. They concentrated up there. You go up Salt Creek Canyon, there had to be over 1,000 people, you know, on the opening day. I mean, it was just unbelievable. It was packed right to the gills. And when we went out that opening morning, it was just like when I was a kid when there were 200,000 hunters in the state at one time. I mean, it was... You know, it was beautiful weather, had a great time, but there are way too many hunters concentrated in that area.
Thank you. Who else wants to share?
I'll share. I was fortunate to draw a muzzleloader Wasatch tag. First time I'd ever been muzzleloading, and harvested a nice mature bull. Had a great time. And then on the deer hunt, I drew the just the general season 17A Wasatch Mountains. It was beautiful weather. I was with my two sons and harvested a nice buck too. So saw plenty of deer. So as an avid waterfowler, I was very, very impressed with big game hunting this year. So I was, my satisfaction rate was very high this year.
Carl.
I didn't hunt deer or elk this year, but in talking with everybody, wide spectrum, some people had just a wonderful, wonderful time. I think they, probably 75%, 25% said there were a lot of hunters where they were at. But I would rate overall that it was, people were pleased. And then as far as my fall, I had a ton of sheep points. So I drew a sheep tag this year and took a real good dram. So I was very pleased.
Chris.
I had a great year this year as well. I also drew a muzzleloader elk tag on the Wasatch and was lucky enough to harvest a nice mature bull. I do dedicated hunter for deer, but this year most of my deer hunt was spent scouting for elk, to be honest. But on the archery hunt, I did get out a bit deer hunting. Specific to the changes with the 30 units, you know, from what I saw, it looked kind of status quo on the unit that I hunted. I didn't really notice a difference, more hunters, less hunters, about the same amount of deer. I didn't notice a big difference. As far as the UWC membership goes and some of the feedback that I've gotten there, it's been a mixed bag. I've seen some hunters that have said, I drew the unit I usually hunt, and there are more hunters than there were before the 30 units. And some have said there's quite a bit less, and some have said it's about the same. So amongst our membership, it's been a really mixed bag as far as the effect of the 30 units. I've heard some stories like Richard's and some like Matt's. It's been a mixed bag, but nothing that seems to be consistent amongst our membership to be able to say good, bad, or indifferent.
So I was a donor this year. The area that I live in has a lot of moose, a lot of elk, a lot of deer, but it's also inside city limits or on the golf course. So if you really want to go to the most successful place, it's the number 11 tee box at the Park Meadows Country Club. I can count 30 to 40 elk a night headed that direction or coming back from there. And but we did volunteer a few moose to John and to his crew to relocate to other places because we lost Mama to road traffic. And so we had a bunch of animals to relocate, or we had some others that got a little too friendly and too used to living in the city and needed to be moved. So we were busy with a lot of that kind of thing. So the organization that I work for represent. Our whole job is trying to keep the population alive so we can have a good hunt. And so that's what we were trying to do.
I'll share. I think we are the sacrifice for everybody this year because my son, 14, or myself, did not draw out on either the elk or the deer. So we were a little bummed. So we were glad to be one of the sacrifices, so maybe next year it'll be better. Last year we did the deer, but in 3 years of him putting in, he has not drawn out on elk yet. So we were successful in Idaho for him. So hopefully next year we'll have some good luck. We're hoping for that for him.
Well, if you want to next year, come work the check station. We'd like to have you.
I'll do it. You shoot anything, Larry? Nothing you want to talk about? All right, John's going to tell us when the board meeting is that this is going to be discussed at.
What is it, December 6th?
I
believe it's the 6th.
5th.
Hold on. 5th is the work session.
Yeah, there's a Wildlife Board work session on the 5th and the 6th.
And our December RAC meeting is the 4th?
I shut everything off. I think it's the 4th. Is it 3rd or 4th?
I don't know. I don't go to that one.
All I see is an apple with a little bite out of it. It'll be a little... Do you know which day our next RAC meeting?
So, we'll see everybody on December 4th for our final RAC meeting of the year. I would like all of you to think about this before our next RAC meeting. We have that long period of time between December and the time we meet again in April. And last year, we used that very effective by having a February meeting with our own agenda. I would like to recommend we do that again, which means that at our December meeting, please come with recommendations about things that you might want to talk about at that meeting that we don't get don't have a chance to talk about at our regular meetings. So I'm looking forward to maybe having an extra meeting next year in February, and John Fairchild will host it and produce a dinner. So think about an agenda for a February meeting, and we'll talk about that in December.
You know, if there's some, you know, information items that you'd like to get a little deeper into some discussions, we could have our biologists show up and give those presentations.
Or we might even have some academic presentations in terms of what's going on in the academic world.
Research projects that we've got going with BYU can be a variety.
So it's open season.